Meanwhile, a big report from a United Nations panel outlines some major concerns for the state of the planet. Sea levels are rising, ice caps are melting, water supplies are under heavy stress, coral reefs are dying, and we're facing intensifying weather patterns with heavy rain and heat waves. According to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change at the UN, global warming is real. It's affecting every continent, and time is short. But despite this report and dozens of other calls for action in Washington, and you've heard them, it seems there's simply no political will to change business as usual or make headway on combating global warming, at least not in Congress. Well, joining us now on the line is Carol Browner. Carol Browner served as director of the White House Office of Energy and Climate Change Policy from 2009 until 2011. And before that, she served as head of the EPA under President Bill Clinton, currently senior counselor at the Albright Stonebridge Group. Ms. Browner, hello.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. Thanks for being with us. Well, a sobering report from the IPCC, and a lot of people saw it. I know that you read it. But let's go back to Congress. Look, we all know that there is going to be no climate change legislation in this Congress. We already know how divided everybody is. But what's the genesis of the opposition? And it's not just Republicans. You've criticized Republicans, of course, in the past. They're not interested in this, but there are a lot of Democrats, too, who don't want to vote for cap and trade or climate change legislation. What's going on?
Well, I think there are two things going on. I think, first of all, you're right to note how important this report is. I mean, it is telling us that this is yet again, it is real. The scientists all agree it's real, and we've got to get on with doing something. But what's going on in Congress is really two things, money and, quite frankly, the news cycle. It is the amount of time that members of Congress have to spend raising money, the amount of money they have to spend, leaves a little time. And then I think for a lot of the news media, you know, they cover a story very, very briefly. They don't have the time and or the willingness to do what you all do, which is to go in depth and really look at the issues. And so folks aren't really getting the kind of news, and they're not understanding the magnitude of the problem that we face.
Well, hang on. I mean, all of that is true, and those are truisms in Congress, but they do still tackle tough problems. I mean, right now, the atmosphere in Congress is a war on coal, so-called, from the White House, calls to increase drilling for natural gas and oil, but no calls really in Congress to go the opposite way on carbon. So what's going on with the politics of this? Who's behind all of these attitudes on both sides of the aisle?
Well, you're right. There's a lot of chatter in Congress, but in terms of actually passing important pieces of legislation, that's not happening when it comes to the environment. The kind of bipartisan support that public health environmental protections enjoyed, you know, 10, 15 years ago when I was at the EPA, simply doesn't exist today. Now, I think the good news is that the president is using his existing authority, the laws on the books, putting in place, proposing shortly standards for coal-fired power plants, for natural gas-fired power plants, requiring them to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. He's already required cars to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and to become more efficient. So it's not as if nothing is happening, but we do need Congress to engage. We absolutely need Congress. And right now, you know, the House day in and day out seems to pass anti-environmental measures. They don't seem to have any interest. You do have some in the Senate. You had, I think, more than a dozen senators take to the floor in a evening session all through the night talking about climate change, trying to raise the issue to get their colleagues to engage. But, you know, I go back to where I started. Unfortunately, right now, the amount of money involved in running for Congress, the amount of money that outsiders, people who are opposed to strong environmental protections, are putting into races is really sort of driving the day, unfortunately.
Now, Carol Browner, you headed the Office of Energy and Climate Change Policy at the White House, and that office was closed after only 2 years under President Obama, closed in 2011 after your tenure. You know, a lot of people in Washington saw that as a White House bow to the forces in Congress who didn't want that office operating, didn't want you operating. Why did that office close? What happened?
The president and I agreed from the very beginning that I would work with him for 2 years to sort of get a program up and running. We were able to reach an agreement on cars, the toughest fuel efficiency standards ever, more than 54 miles per gallon by model year 2025, trucks, the first greenhouse gas standards. And now you have, you know, the agencies. You have Gina McCarthy at EPA using her authority under the Clean Air Act to propose and set standards on power plants. The president last summer laid out the Climate Action Plan. So it's not as if nothing's going on, but it's very common in administrations that at the beginning you organize things and you get things up and established, and then the day-to-day workings of the agencies take hold, as well they should, because that's where the power is ultimately vested to set the enforceable standards. And that's what's important here. The president
there are also a lot of forces in Congress, of course, Carol Brunner, who are against that office to begin with. Let's remind people of Senator Joe Manchin, Democrat from West Virginia, who ran for Senate by taking out a gun and shooting the climate change cap and trade bill attached to a tree on television. Carol Brunner, former director of the EPA and former director of the White House Office for Climate Change and Energy Policy. Thank you so much. Well, according to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change at the UN, the impacts of climate change, they're here to stay.
One of the most important findings is that we're not in an era where climate change is some kind of a future hypothetical. We live in a world where impacts of climate changes that have already occurred are widespread and consequential.
That's Dr. Chris Field. He's IPCC co-chair talking about the new report out this week. Well, as dire as this sounds, and the IPCC says it is dire, some companies and even a few small countries have found some ways to benefit from climate change. Melting ice caps have brought new shipping routes in Iceland and Greenland. Companies like Monsanto have found new profits in drought-resistant crops, and there are lots of others too. Mackenzie Funk is an expert on the potential profit of global warming, and he writes about it in his recent book, Windfall, The Booming Business of Global Warming, and he joins me now.
Hi.
Thanks for joining us. Well, is this really an issue of some smart people buying up the land where it's going to be still raining in 30 years, or is this about the hedge fund financiers who are finding ways to profit on the margins here?
You know, there's a little bit of both. In fact, there are hedge funds that are buying up all the land. One of the major targets had been Ukraine. That's obviously not as good a bet as it once was. There's a lot of interest in Africa as well, just because there's a lot of land there. There's a lot of water. So there's been a lot of purchasing of farmland along the Nile.
What are land prices looking like in these places? Are they seeing an effect in prices as the hedge funds take interest?
Well, Ukraine was a huge amount of interest from, you know, China had paid billions of dollars for some farmland there recently. As I understand it, the prices of farmland in Canada already not as high as the States, but are going up. And, you know, parts of Africa, it's still cheap to buy and a bigger risk for political reasons, as they say.
You know, when I first started reading about this, I assumed, as a lot of people might, that, oh, the profiteers or the profit makers in global warming, it'll be people who make solar panels, for instance, because we'll want to reduce emissions. But this is really more about the consequences, not protection in a lot of ways. I mean, we're talking about the gigantic trends of fish migration, human migration, land change, things like that.
Yeah. And if you're looking just at food, which is one of the big things coming out of the report, there's the idea that we can genetically modify crops. And so there's a lot of money going into genetic modification. You know, there's Monsanto and Syngenta. Those are a big part of any climate fund's portfolio because they expect they'll do better in a warming world.
Nobody's going to be surprised to hear that Monsanto's on the front end of this. Is this genetic engineering of plants to survive better in low water conditions, for instance?
Exactly, and also in high salinity. If the sea level rises and you still want to grow your rice, then they might be able to help you.
What's going on with fresh water? I mean, we hear so much already that, you know, the next war isn't over oil, it's over Mideast water, and climate change can only make that worse. So who has the most to gain from dwindling fresh water supplies in these tough parts of the world, do you think?
It's actually really hard to make a lot of money off water, and that's for two reasons. One, everyone has heard that story before. So a lot of governments have very protectionist laws about water. You can't just sell it across the border in some cases. You can't do it from Canada, for instance. And it's very heavy. It's about 8 pounds per gallon. So putting that in tankers, like people talk about shipping around the world, it's actually kind of a stupid idea. The people who are making some money off this are small hedge funds that invest in water rights. And you can do that in the American West, and you can do it in Australia, and you can do it in a few other places. You can separate the land title from a water title. And you can trade water like it's a piece of stock up and down the river system. So I visited a hedge fund in California that works on the Colorado River and elsewhere, just buying up water rights. And that gets sold to cities down the stream. It gets sold to whoever wants it.
Now, what about sort of the real-world consequences of global warming, rising sea levels? One might think that a company that pours concrete in new seawalls would do well. Who else does well in rising sea levels?
The Dutch is the long and short answer.
Oh, well, they have some experience with it.
Yeah, and you'd be surprised if you travel to Holland or to the Netherlands and you talk to people. There's not a lot of gloom. There's a lot of talking about climate change as an opportunity. And for a country that's spent, you know, generations preparing for sea level rise, they've got subsidence. They're already very low. So they've been dealing with the kind of sea level rise forever. And they want to sell that expertise to the world. And they're doing so increasingly. They're engineering companies that will build seawalls and storm surge barriers like that for New York City. They're ones that will build you an entire floating city, not just floating homes, but, you know, floating parks, floating schools, floating streets. And that's that they're beginning to sell these technologies everywhere.
All right, Mackenzie Funk. I mean, I like to be prudent. I like to save. I want to make some money for my future. Let's say I have, you know, a couple $1,000, a little nest egg before we let you go. Where's the smartest money right now if I at least want to, you know, get a little bit of personal profit off of a global catastrophe?
You know, I'm not sure it's in climate change. From what I've seen, a lot of these investment funds that would allow the general public to join in, they've got such a short time horizon compared to how climate change is. I mean, if you're an investor, you want to see returns not on even a 5-year scale. You want to see your money back in 1 year. You know, climate change, as much as it's with us, is still many years out. A lot of these funds do badly by the way we measure things. You've got to have a 30-year view, and I'm afraid I don't think that many of us humans do. That's the problem.
Well, Mackenzie Funk is an expert on the profit of global warming. He has a book called Windfall, The Booming Business of Global Warming. The takeaway there might be a lot of money to be made, but not in 1 year, not in 5 years. It's a long view investment. You got to have 30 years to make your money. Mackenzie Funk, thank you.
Thank you.